right, it's Tuesday the 15th at 7 p.m. We're gathered together as the data subcommittee.
6 p.m.
6 p.m. The EDC meets at 7 p.m., right?
Right, yeah.
Yeah, that's where I got that from. 6 p.m., happy for all of us to be here. Jay Clement in attendance.
Susan Marcus.
Tom Rutliff.
Roland Benjamin.
Rob Zernetsky.
Chelsea Seifert.
With introductions out of the way, Rob, the floor is yours. What are we doing here?
So, so this actually started as Roland's project. The origins of this concept are the school committee's desire to get a handle on enrollment relative to the school facilities project. So they started a committee called the Contingency Committee, which was really a way to handle concerns that closing Wakefield was premature because something might happen in the demographics that would require us to reopen Wakefield School in the next 5 years. So in order to address that, the committee got together and started asking the question, okay, what are the things that could happen that would change the demographic outlook? That committee became irrelevant once we decided as a matter of policy to keep Wakefield open. So the question in my mind became, okay, that was a really good idea. How do we keep it going? How do we keep, you know, a committee going that is paying attention to the forces that are driving us? And so what I did to sort of prepare for this, and then sort of thinking through the budget back in December, because I'm a nerd too, I've started modeling what I think is a way to think about. This is mostly budget stuff, but when we get to the back slides here, we'll start seeing what's going on. So let me talk first from this slide because it sort of explains the concept, and then we'll go from there. If you ask the question, what drives the tax rate? Only two things. It's the total cost of the program, municipal and school, and it's the value of property. That's it. There's nothing else. The property tax rate is a function of what you have to take out and what you can take from, the properties that you can tax. That's it. The value of tax...
There are expenses in addition to the education, though.
There's only the education program and the municipal program. The total program.
Okay.
The total program. Okay. In fact, yep. The expenditure side shows the breakout on the tax rate. This is only the tax rate. It's 25% goes to the municipal program, 75% goes to the... Now, there's a bunch of stuff on the revenue side that kind of offsets that a little bit. It's actually fairly significant. What's that? It's 18. It's 23% of all revenues come in from other sources, not from the property taxpayer, but from other sources. Some of that's state housing aid or state education aid. Some of that's direct state aid for roads. Some of that's... the hotels and meals tax. A lot of it is fines. A lot of it is licenses and permits. On the value of property, it's the number of properties, how many subdivisions have you got, and the value of those. That's it. These four things are it. I mean, it's education, the municipal program, the number of parcels or subdivision units, and the value of those units. That's the entire municipal, that's municipal finance done. I mean, there's nothing else to worry about. But there's obviously more detail to this stuff. The number of parcels is really a function of the cost of subdivision. You know, what's it cost to come in and do development in here? And that has regulatory drivers and non-regulatory drivers. Cost of development in places with lots of ledge is much more than the cost of development with good land, yada, yada, yada. But the regulatory stuff is how many times do you make them go before the planning board? How many times do you make them go before the zoning board of appeals to appeal a zoning board decision? All of that stuff starts building into the cost and is something that we can affect. Growth is the strategy that most communities use to deal with increasing municipal costs, particularly education costs, but growth. I've got a map that I've shown in a number of presentations lately that shows the only dark spot on the entire eastern seaboard is Charlestown and South Kingstown. And that's because we didn't use growth as our strategy for growing the budget. We, in fact, just sort of let the buildings fall apart. That's how we maintain things for a long, long time. Value of each parcel, there's sort of a quality element that's a big deal, and we'll get into that a little bit later. But the quality thing starts becoming one of the things that I think we get to play with quite a bit. We'll flip that on. Expense drivers, we're going to just skip over this because this is almost entirely, you know, municipal budget stuff. You don't have to worry about it. I will, on the next slide, talk a little bit about it because it's one of the things that people like to talk about all the time, and in fact, we're hearing it in the school facilities debate now. They say, if we have beautiful parks, and if we spend money on beautiful schools, and if we spend more money, we'll attract more money, which is an interesting idea. It's not really a great idea because, as we'll see as we get through here, it doesn't really work.
Well, it's not a certainty either.
Well, it also does things that you don't want it to do. If you focus on this strategy, the next slide over, of attributes and number on the schools in particular, it could be parks, it could be senior centers, it could be whatever, it doesn't matter. But if you focus on the attributes and the number of schools having low student-teacher ratios, having small classes, having beautiful, you know, atriums and this kind of thing, is our inducement of immigration into the area, right? We're going to get people to come into the area. What that tends to do, unless you're growing your stock of housing, however, is displace people who don't have the money to stay as demand for the limited supply of housing stock increases. So, in fact, what you're doing here is contrary to the town's stated objective of having more affordable housing. So it's these movements that we've got to start getting a handle on and start, again, modeling and putting some numbers to. So the last slide is, I think, the model that I'm coming to for us to, I think, start working on. If we think about it as a gravity model, how do we attract enough growth? And then Chelsea's problem is where to put that growth, how to make sure that that growth is infill and not destroying the green areas of town. That's a regulatory problem. But if we see as our objective driving growth, which is sort of a variation on the how to drive student population, but driving growth, these are the things that matter. It's affordability. It's commutability. It's the safety and you know, sort of ephemeral stuff that makes a community a great place to be. It's well-maintained, clean, and all that stuff. It's got places to go and things to do. It's got parks. It's got recreation facilities. It's got public and private stuff. It's got cafes. It's got, you know, all of this stuff if we push it out. Each one of these things contributes to immigration in a definable way. So if I just take... So the premise that comes from the school facilities thing is we should invest the money in, and I don't mean to pick on that project, it just happens to be first and foremost in my mind these days, but if we put the money into the school facilities, we'll attract more people to town, and that's good because we need more people, because we need more students, and because we want to have the diversity and the vibrancy that comes with that. But that's really not what drives people's decisions. People decide where to live, and we know this, based on whether it's commutable. Nobody lives 2 hours from where they work so that the kids can be in a good school district. They don't do it. It doesn't happen. 1 hour, probably not. 45 minutes, we're starting to get there. We know from the Bureau of Transportation Statistics data going back 50 years, we have a 30-minute commute preference. If you get out further than 30 minutes, you move your place of work, or you move your place of residence. People have about a 30-minute, on average, tolerance for commute. Commute is number one. Then you look around and say, okay, within my 30-minute commuting distance, where can I afford to live? Then you say, within those towns that I can afford to live within the 30-minute commuting distance, which ones have the best schools? That's how the decisions get made. And trying to do that for all of the decisions that has huge implications, huge amounts of information that we can feed into the decision-making processes that the council pursues over the next 5, 10, whatever it is. I mean, informing public policy this way is huge, I think.
The 30-minute commute, Yeah. Has that been tested recently? Because I'm seeing
it's getting
increased
longer,
flows.
But even last year's data, it's increased by something like 13 seconds. It's just not grown that much. I think the Northeast is probably worse on that statistic. I don't know, but probably a lot worse than, you know, the Midwest.
It's easier commute there.
Right. But people do choose to move. I mean, people will not tolerate a 50-minute commute forever. They don't. I mean, there are obviously some. There's a guy in Greenwich, Connecticut, who for years and years and years got the award for longest commute in New England because he traveled from Greenwich to Boston every single day. But there aren't too many people like that.
Okay. I just was gauging it based on flows on one.
Yep.
It just seems they're getting worse. And I'm not talking about beach traffic.
So there's a bunch of things that might contribute to that. Just increased volume because you have more than one person working out of town now. So if it used to be that, you know, the husband or the wife lived in town and worked in town, now they're both working in Providence, you've just doubled the flow.
Hmm. Okay.
Which, by the way, does increase commute times, which, by the way, is not good for us because if that rule...
Favors, yeah.
Right.
It's too far.
Right. So that suggests, if commutability is a major thing, a better intervention, our time and money are better spent doing what we can to promote employment locally rather than focusing on schools or parks, relatively speaking. Now, obviously, all of this stuff has to be balanced, but we don't spend any time or money on employment locally. We don't do anything to support local businesses. We see local businesses as a revenue source, and that's about it. Mm. We've got to start defining that so that it makes sense.
Yeah, we're also well below the 10% statutory recommendation for affordable housing, which would help support...
Affordability is a huge... I mean, affordability is a problem, and we know in places where they haven't focused on affordability, you end up with, in New England seaside communities, you end up with places that are absolutely desolate. In the winter.
Yeah.
I mean, Chatham, Massachusetts is my favorite example. There's nobody who lives in Chatham after October. Nobody.
Isn't there a development going up that's just like that? That's... Yeah.
Here?
Okay. Yeah, in South Kingstown.
Oh, this is
the
South
Kingstown Village and Country Club?
Yes, yes.
Designed not to be occupied.
Yeah, exactly right. Yeah. All right, so what we're looking to do is accrue some data that can give empirical directedness.
So this is my first, you know, cut at sort of a model that gets at many of the things. I don't know if I've captured all of the things, but I think we have to develop a model of the things that we think matter for South Kingstown. What are the things? I mean, safety is a pretty important thing everywhere. Okay, how are we going to measure it? Is it really, you know, we don't really have a statistical profile of the community that includes crime rate. I mean, we know the crime rate. We can figure it out, but we don't build it into anything. It just isn't, you know, it's more an ambient thing. Traffic. We don't have a good measure. We were talking about this morning.
Mm-hmm.
God, time flies.
Seems like a long time ago, right?
Sure does. We don't have statistics on, you know, not readily available. They exist, and we can pull them out of the police department. But we don't really keep track of and use in discussions with the council what our accident rate is, our pedestrian accident rate at Middle Bridge, or our automobile accident rate at Route 1 in Broad Rock, or 138 in Broad Rock. We know that it's bad, but we just sort of feel our way through that. Hmm. Giving real numbers to that, and then trying to understand the relationship between traffic and desirability. Again, if the idea is to figure out the gravity model, is traffic in fact impeding our attracting people to town? Is this a thing that makes us less desirable?
Mm.
I don't know the answer. I mean,
it seemed to be a major factor in terms of that research center up at URI, that it's basically in the middle of nowhere and not really accessible by main roads.
You're referencing the research center that never ended up happening?
Exactly.
Exactly.
Well, when that study pointed to the site being pretty isolated in terms of major access from Route 1 or 95.
Of course, it's right on the Amtrak train line.
Yeah, but...
And there was also concern about the
forest.
Yeah, there was the forest.
That was the big.
Well, that was one of the sites, but yeah.
But if we look at the well-maintained variable and the sub-variables there, the related variables, we know that there's a whole literature on private maintenance, the broken windows theory in law enforcement is all about what happens when you allow private property to become dilapidated.
Yeah.
People don't respect their neighborhood because they see signals that suggest they shouldn't. So what is the tipping point for us there? When does that become, is Peacedale suffering from that? I don't know the answer, but there's data out there, there's stuff for us to sort of gauge. You know, what's the research say about that? Is it five buildings on a block really causes it? There may be a study that somebody's done that says just that. And we've got five buildings on a block in downtown Peacedale. Does that matter? It sure does because the research says so. I don't know the answer.
Mm-hmm.
But on the public stuff, the fact that we don't clean up Main Street, the fact that we're not picking up the trash, the fact that we're not pulling the weeds, is that in fact hurting business? We think it probably does, but then again, not enough to do anything about it, right? Mm-hmm.
That one's going to be a hard one to measure. I mean, you could... I think it's pathetic. We have a street sweeper, which we paid for, and it's apparently too expensive to use, so we don't keep the leaves out of the storm sewers, and then we have a different set of problems. So that's something you can look at. And I don't know, you could look at the weeds coming up through the concrete and see how often you have to replace the concrete, but that one's going to be tough. I mean, I think it would be... I think it'd be great to demonstrate that if we swept more of those leaves and pulled more of those weeds, it would be better. Because I do think, for me, that the aesthetic of that says I don't care.
Right.
It's like the broken. For me, that's the broken windows. Because I don't live in a broken window neighborhood. So that's the thing that says nobody cares.
So in my head, the approach here ought to be to look first out of all. Blow out the variable list. Blow out the relationships so that we have a big map that shows what we think matters. This is, again, first cut at what I think matters in terms of attracting people and making this an attractive place. That's the objective of this, you know, this map. What is it that makes this an attractive place? There may be other things that we should be focusing on, and I don't know, you know, I haven't thought through all of that, but get the list of variables that we care about, and then start figuring out strategies for filling in our knowledge gap. Now, to the extent that that's just, hey, do a Google Scholar search and find six articles, read the six articles, and be able to say broken windows is real, and they say that five buildings on a block makes the difference. We've got these places in town that have five buildings on the block that are in need of repair. These are places where we ought to focus. That kind of approach, where we can collect the data. You know, where were our accidents? Pedestrians on car, bicycle on car, bicycle on pedestrian. Where were our accidents in town? We can inform the public traffic stuff much more directly.
Yeah. So the police don't collect it?
They do.
Yeah,
collect it.
We just don't compile it.
They don't analyze it in any way. They just have it.
But at least the data's there.
The data are there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
We've got probably lots of data. I mean, we have lots of data, but we don't do anything with it.
Okay.
Probably a lot on paper sheets, too.
Actually, I'm pretty impressed with the records here in South Kingstown. I think from the early 2000s, for the last 20 years, there's good digital data.
Okay, good.
For the most part.
What work did the contingency committee do up till now? I'm unfamiliar with their past role and
the big push for it originally was it really wasn't about one school.
Okay.
We could see the kind
my,
of
my
the,
characterization. Yeah.
Okay. Well, it dominated every discussion, obviously, but the real reason was to say we're making and we've seen mistakes like this happen in other communities where you ignore things that are very, very much indicated early on. So we wanted to create this sort of committee that said, if our trends in population, especially school-age population, continue this way, or inflect and then start coming the other way. We want to be able to make decisions before we cross any kind of points of no return. But it was way beyond whether we just open or close a school. It was, might we need to consider some other addition someplace else because it's a different age population? Might we need to accelerate some consolidation because we're dropping below trends? There's a lot of these different things. We had something like birth rate in town, which is a very significant predictor of what's going to be in the schools within 5 years. So we've got leading indicators that are incredibly predictive. The other parts that started to come out of this were this idea of in-migration into the district, and that's what this municipal...
Right.
And I'm kind of looking at that and going... So what we started to do is just identify what are the things, these three characteristics, commutability, affordability, and education, are significant to draw people into the community. If those are the... And that's where some of these questions for me are coming up. If those are the three things that drive this... Then, and we're trying to drive this higher, mm-hmm. which I think I would test even that assumption, because if it's not done in a balanced way, you're going to run into the same kind of problems we always have. But because if
that's exactly
let's say
right.
you,
and that's
you
why
doubled your school age population today in the existing taxable base that we have,
right.
we have major challenges to overcome.
Which is exactly why I say it's Chelsea's problem to figure out how to do this in the right places.
So
it's a key. I mean, we can't do. This is a. Jason, we're talking about this as a gravity model. How do you attract people into town? How do you make the town attractive? We have got to figure out how to do growth because it is part of the solution. There's no doubt about it. The problem we've got on the land use regulation side is that our land, and Chelsea can plug her ears, our land use regulations suck.
I didn't
they just
write them.
Suck. Yeah, that's true. They just suck. I mean, they're just god-awful regulations. Yeah. They blend urban and suburban in a way that just makes no sense. You end up with little subdivisions very tightly packed in the middle of green fields. You end up with two-acre lots downtown.
Yeah.
It's nuts. I mean, it's just absolutely insane. So we have to fix the land use regulation and allow for more dense use in Wakefield, Peacedale, and Kingston. That's got to happen, and we've got to win that war, too. But we're not going to win the war of balancing the school budget or the town budget or anything unless we can get, again, coming back to the original, there's only reductions or increase. That's it. There's nothing else you can do.
How do jobs fit into this? I mean, indirectly, if you have more jobs here, the commute drops.
That's correct.
But isn't that a driver in and of itself?
It should be.
Because it'll suck people in here.
Absolutely. And we spend zero effort right now trying to recruit business.
No,
zero. We have no economic development coordinator.
No,
we have no one recruiting business.
When we talk about the number of parcels and the value of those parcels, we're not just talking about homes. Right, we're talking about all parcels, which includes commercial parcels
and
attracting folks there. And I think relative to, you know, the growth rate, to me it's really important to realize that we're not just trying to replace the people who are in current homes with people who have school-aged children, but to grow the base in total, right? So you're saying we're going to keep maybe all the people who are here now and then add people and have people turn over. So it's not just a stagnant number that you're sort of replacing people within their existing homes. You're growing in some, you know, manageable way.
All while trying to tighten up our understanding of what it is to have a central village and a park-like setting around it. Because the green space is what makes South Kingstown awesome. So the regulations need to be rewritten so as to encourage denser development in the central villages, and to discourage development.
So what
in
is
the ring.
Sorry. Problem with, I mean, we have a high housing value.
Yep.
Now.
Yeah.
As we bring in more housing, that will tend to drop the housing value, which disincentivizes builders from building.
So
how do you combat that? I mean,
well, except that you might build different housing.
Yeah.
You might not compete with the housing that you have. You might try to fill in gaps, because I believe we have a number of gaps, and then that wouldn't be competition. Right.
Market segmentation is a big part of the answer.
I mean, it depends on what questions we're trying to answer. I mean, when we had this committee, the question that we were focused on was bringing families in.
Right.
And it didn't seem like some of those other options were as attractive to bringing families in as the type of houses that cost, that now in South Kingstown cost $300,000, $400,000, $500,000.
Yeah, so there's a concept in planning called the missing middle, right? You have small footprint apartments and you have large scale McMansions and there's nothing in the middle, right? And that's, South Kingstown is suffering from that right now. We have nothing in the middle.
Well, we do have a lot of stuff in the middle, but it's not terribly appealing. We have a lot of, you know, sort of, I think we have some neighborhoods with kind of early 20th century housing, and those aren't houses that can...
Yeah, they're not...
They're kind of neither fish nor fowl.
Right.
They're not big enough for some, and they're not small enough for others. Or
right.
I've been shocked at the housing value data. I mean, we think about it as an affluent community, but when I look at the data, better than 25% of the housing stock is valued at less than $230,000.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We've been talking about
doing a
mapping exercise that matches age with value, too.
That's partly vision appraisal.
Okay.
I think, in that, I don't know how they do their appraisals, but since there's not a lot of rapid turnover of properties, you don't get a market price adjusted frequently on a lot of properties, and I
do think that an assessor can send a signal to vision appraisal, and vision appraisal picks up on the sort of buzz or the sort of vibe in town hall. And I do think that we have, in a period of rapid appreciation, been very aware of the fact that we're hurting the old timers. So I think that the vibe in town hall has been, give them a break, give them a break. Mm-hmm. So I do think that our values are understated.
Yeah,
but
so, I mean, that's just, I think that's a little bit of what you see when you look at them.
But if you look at the top end, I mean, the top quartile is still, the median price in the top quartile is only 520 or something. It's really not, it's not that high.
Yeah, no.
So, Roland, returning back to Passport Contingency Committee, you mentioned some demographic data. I'm assuming that came from American Community Survey and the U.S. Census.
No, we were looking at. We get in the school district. You get every year. You get a report from, it's NASDAQ. I don't know, New England something.
Yep,
something
education.
Yeah, that gives you number of births or number of kids that came into the district that were between age 0 and 1 during the year. Okay. So it's effectively births, but it's a little bit bigger than that. And then they give you school demographics across the entire, not just public schools, but how many kids in the district are going to private schools, charter schools, homeschools, choosing to opt out of the district and go to another public district. It gives all that information. That's the main demographic of children that we're seeing. What we started to do then is say, again, along these lines, the idea of the 30-minute commute, the big things that we've seen in other districts that's created issues with buildings is something that affected the local employment, like in Newport, where with BRAC changed the dynamics of what was going on in Newport. We wanted to identify those first things. What are the big employers in town, and is there a possible? This would have been an indicator that would say, for example, South County Hospital says we're too small to compete in the hospital world anymore. We're done. Right. All of a sudden, that changes our profile here.
You are kidding,
right? Or if URI decides we're going to incredibly accelerate the engineering program or another program, and hire on 500 new faculty member over the next 3 years, that would have an impact on us. We wouldn't know how that turns into classroom load, but it would be what we were seeing is a demographic study that we got out of NASDAQ plus another one that we hired for the facility plan out of Connecticut. I don't remember where it's from. That said, all right, given everything static in your economic situation, your home price, your the interest rates, all these other, the current environment, here's what we anticipate your school-age population to do. And then he lists these different things that might change that. So we wanted to watch those. We wanted to, we created a decision path that said, assuming this, then this is what we're going to do. What are the things that jump us off that path, and what might indicate those that we're coming off that path early? Births was the first thing, but the second thing was the town might. There was talk of, we were trying to identify what are the reasons why people aren't moving here as young families, and of course there's home values and that kind of thing that drive that. But we were really trying to get to what has the town done differently that would indicate that 10 years from now we might have more children.
And so the reason that I want to continue that work is because that question, what is it that we can do to attract children, from my perspective is, what must we do to attract the adults who come with the children? And that's,
totally justified. Right. Now, Roland, what are the data points that you have, other than, because you'd say the demographic data and NASDAQ and then the company out of Connecticut?
McKibben and Cropper. They were a demographer. One, they identified their projections versus forecasts. One did a little more demographic study.
Should be getting an updated one this week.
Yeah. Right, we did just funded one now. That is not just looking at school-age children. NASDAQ is just how many kids are there. And they get their data from...
Cropper's was more substantial.
It's KidsNet. KidsNet? Yeah, from the healthcare, Department of Health. Cropper was everything. Like, let's talk about women aged 25 to 40. There's, I don't know what the charts they're called, but bar charts of demographics.
And he broke it down by districts. So he broke it down like Matuna, Wakefield, Peacedale, whereas NASDAQ is just across the district.
What methodology do they use?
They use a birth cohort.
NASDAQ did, yeah.
They both do.
Yeah.
NASDAQ and, well, McKibben did a birth cohort, but he used 5-year averages, whereas NASDAQ used year by year averages.
Oh, okay.
So, like, they would predict. So, for instance, this coming year, there are 145 births, which is an abnormally low year. So it went 194, 182, 145, and then back up into the 160s and 170s. So NASDAQ projected like 148 kids in kindergarten next year because of that 145, whereas McKibben was, we have an average of 180 kids, and we're going to say there's going to be 185 coming in each.
I mean, do you know what caused that?
We don't know what caused that dip, no. I thought maybe it might have been a typo.
But if you look at 20 years, it's low, but it's right on it's on the bottom side of the trend.
It might just be an anomaly.
Because it was only from there, it was 145, 162, 170, and then 157.
So it's still
okay.
The trend is pretty well developed.
The Navy was deployed.
So mostly what you have is demographic data.
Yes, that's all. That's the only solid data that we have.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it doesn't get to any of Rob's things.
We were in the process of trying to get some employment data.
We did get some information from URI from the thing because we were also those things we were worried about. We were trying to say, all right, well, we know that URI, for example, hired X number of faculty in the last 10 years, and this is what our demographics looked like over that same stretch of time. So now we're saying, all right, so if they're adding hundreds and we're still declining, then they need to add multiple hundreds.
Or we need to find out why
they're coming here instead of North Kingstown.
Yeah. Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's the other piece. I mean, every one of these data points opens up a whole line of questions that we've got to start answering.
Yeah.
And we've got good data about URI. URI employment, we've got, what we don't have is where faculty choose to live. We don't know what percentage of new faculty choose South Kingstown as
opposed to... Oh, but I bet you are. Doesn't you are?
I would have that.
I would think you are. Right. I would know that. Because that's part of their selling.
One of the things we should be doing is figuring out all the questions we want to have you or I answer.
Well, right. We want a better relationship with you or I so that...
So one of the things that I did when we, towards the end of the contingency committee is I looked at if we have a goal for how many kids we want coming into kindergarten. So if we want to, for instance, hold 200, then based on the demographic data we have, we know how much migration we need, right? So we know that we need to bring in 30 more kids a year than we currently are. And so we can do that calculation, figure out what type of housing stock and how many houses we're going to need to build, and you can use that to start planning to say, if you really want that level of, in your schools, then... And that's the type of thinking that we thought was...
We do know some more about that, which may help us sort of puzzle some of this through. We've done the number, and we're gaining 103, on average, residents.
Residents. Oh, residents.
Yeah. New residents. You just did the number.
I did. I don't know what...
What, per year?
Sorry.
Per year.
So where do they go if the housing inventory is static?
We're seeing 33 new construction... homes each year.
Right.
33 a year is what we see.
About three people per home.
Yeah. But the number's 100.
That's about three people per 100.
Okay, that's I thought it was residences.
Right. So I meant what percentage of those are families?
Yeah, okay.
Just curious.
We don't know.
You don't know, okay.
No.
So that was one of the things that another thing that was starting to kind of percolate is the question of can we get a survey out to the real estate firms to say, when you're selling a house, just ask, can we get some more accurate demographic data? And when, kindergarten enrollment, can we ask them, when did you come to South Kingstown?
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And, in theory, we've got them.
Right.
Why did you choose South Kingstown? Where do you
exactly,
work?
Exactly, yeah.
In town, Are we seeing people who are choosing 45-minute commutes for some weird reason? That would be interesting. Those kinds of things are what we need to...
So how can we share all the data that we have right now?
Yeah, how can we find
out
what
you have?
So we
know we're not... What, you two seem like... Jason, we should quickly do introductions. I'm Jake.
Hey, Jake.
I'm Susan Marcus.
Tom Rutland.
Tom. Jason Ralph.
I'm still rolling.
Yeah.
Okay. So how can we all share this rather than just a massive inbox drop?
I could do there's a Google Drive account or something.
Yeah, Google Drive shared across.
We have a town FTP site that the Economic Development Committee already has a folder on. So I can give you all access to that with password.
That'd be wonderful.
That'd be the easiest way. I won't be able to get your stuff off Google Drive, so the FTP site's better.
Okay,
sure.
We're locked out.
I haven't heard FTP.
Yeah, I know, it's crazy, but we've got one.
Oh, my God, really?
And we use it well, actually.
We use it a lot. Yeah.
Okay.
Cool.
Yeah, we can do that.
I'll have to remember how to do it.
Since one of the things we're talking about is the housing, where do we stand in terms of zoning changes that would allow higher density?
Yeah, we just a couple weeks ago kicked off that project with our consultant. They're doing, the first part of it is really to understand what we have and what our local development patterns are in the different villages. They're going to come back to us with some things in February, and then we're going to start doing sort of a envisioning educational process to bring everyone up to speed on what we need and what people want and all of that. And then the zoning amendments after that. So it is moving. It's not...
I think it's a year out before it's done?
Yeah.
We're going to try to keep their schedule as tight as possible, but they were looking initially at 18 months.
Yeah.
And what about the land use changes? Is there any chance
The comp plan, you mean? The comp plan?
Where is the comp plan?
All of that, all of the regulatory changes need to be informed by this kind of thing.
Okay.
And arguably by a second one that focuses on not so much housing, but the commercial side.
Mm-hmm. We
tried to blend it. Their contract says affordable housing and mixed use, but... That's the tail, it's not the dog hair.
URI is opening their engineering building in about a year or so. That's got to bring on some additional people.
Right.
Now, you know, how many choose to be in South Kingstown?
Exactly.
That's another.
So one of the things, and maybe that's a good one for us to focus on, one of the things we've talked about is some sort of incentive. You know, give URI faculty who choose to live in South Kingstown a tax break for the first
time. Vermont offers $10,000 for people moving to the state.
Right.
As one example.
Right.
The state gives a home ownership credit for people who graduate from a state college, don't they, and then live here for 5 years?
Talking about the wave makers.
Don't they do something like that?
Okay. Started with Raimondo, yeah, when she came in 4 years ago.
So there's an obvious concern that the most expensive family that the most expensive taxpayer to bring in is one that has two or three kids.
Mm-hmm.
Yet if that's an objective, how do we fund those kids' education with the rest of the planning?
So it's only the most expensive if you have to add capacity on the labor side or the capital side. We have excess capacity right now.
Physical space, but every 20 kids, actually probably every 6 kids, depending on where they go, you might need another.
Yep.
So we could.
That's where the BEP comes in. That's what you need. On average, it's about $12,000, not the 20 that we pay now. But so if it one student, even that incremental, if it's literally just one, it's not that expensive. But if it's on average, when you start talking about 100 more students come into the district, you're going to be talking about significantly more than the taxes that they will pay, in particular if they're moving into homes that were already paying real estate taxes prior to that. So
part of the reason we're in this predicament, it seems to me, is that the town, at least from the time that I started sort of noticing anything, it's been encouraging the 55 and older. And frankly, I think there's always a problem when you play with those demographic stuff.
Mm-hmm.
China, the one-child policy is an extreme example. But, I mean, we shouldn't have done that. We shouldn't have looked at those. It was exactly the argument you're giving, that we don't, you know, those families are more expensive because their kids are going to load up the schools and we won't have the capacity. But I think that's a mistake. I think if you want a community that is attractive, you want a community that ranges from, you know.
And I think that is the prevailing sentiment among the full-year residents right now. I think there's probably a bunch of folks who go home to Connecticut and New York and come back in the summer who don't care one way or the other. But I think the folks who are here all year do think, in order to sustain the community in the long haul, we have got to have young people. We can't just have wealthy New Yorkers who live here in the summer and Florida in the winter, and it's not what we want to be. We don't want to be Chatham.
Yeah, look no further than the school committee elections from November, because he proved positive on that. Okay, so.
So can we get a list of all the stuff that is collected so we can begin to kind of think? I mean,
is all of that on that site, or do we have to deposit
that?
It's
not
there yet.
No. Okay.
No, and we'd really want to know what you want. I need to know what you want to see if we have it.
Well, I have a slightly better idea of what we're looking for. But only slightly. And it would depend a lot on, you know, sort of what is there and easily found.
So let's talk about what we've got. Have we got?
What have we
we've
got?
We've got building permit data for the last 25 years.
Yeah,
digitally, I think we may have
heard 10 years. All right. We've got 10 years of digital data.
Okay.
Everything else is in a box in the basement.
That's what I want. That was the thing.
And home sale.
And those building permits will tell us things like numbers of bedrooms and.
No.
They don't. They're
square
just
footage.
That won't tell us.
There's a description field. There's a value, a construction cost.
You could probably take the square footage and have a basic estimate of how many bedrooms you have.
And the description might say.
Oh, how about bathrooms?
No.
That's
in the tax assessor's data.
The tax assessor's data are probably digital for longer than that.
Much longer.
25 years.
Yep. And that has.
That's number of bedrooms, stuff. Number of bathrooms.
Year built.
Yeah.
Oh, God.
Lots of stuff in there.
Acreage.
If it has a basement, if it has a porch, all of that, like literally anything you could want to know about a piece of property is in there.
And that's the tax success, assessor's information is different from the vision.
The taxes is more than what's on the vision.
Yeah. Okay. It's very similar. They track one another. Vision mirrors it, but it's a little more detailed.
Is the end point here the deliverable, ideally a model where you can just say, what if this changes? And
I like that idea, to be honest with you. I love being able to say, we should intervene here, try to attract more businesses or try to recruit businesses or try to promote businesses because it's going to have this impact as opposed to this other thing that's going to have a fractional impact.
Or if you see something that happens, you can say, this is what we think this is going to cause 5 years from now. Yeah. Or
exactly.
1 year from
somebody
now.
Closes a business.
Yeah, but doing those models well is tricky.
So, I mean, you know, so
you're saying ideally.
When we were in the original, the contingency committee, our idea was get as much data sources as we can, then look back 10 years and see how did those factors relate to our end goal deliverable that we're looking for. Weight those factors that way, and then use that going forward.
But
create a model and test it against the
This is the expenditure side, but I can run the expenditure side from $1 down to, you know, at least the 48-cent, 17-cent area here, and you can see where you can make an intervention that matters. There's almost no point messing around with, you know, if you're trying to save money, messing around with capital investment on the municipal side. It's a minuscule number. Similarly, the capital investment on the school side is even smaller, and if you're trying to intervene to reduce that number, you're probably doing harm. That number probably does need to come up because it's too damn small.
How about the state's feedback? In other words, money from the state, funds. Where is that playing?
Yeah, we've got all those data forever that we've got.
I don't see that as particularly informative of...
Oh, it's affected the schools, right?
Yeah.
Would it affect rational decision making in the town, given that the money that comes from the state is
not as the end user?
We've got tons and tons of revenue data, and I think it's covered. I think we've got the revenue side covered. I mean, I don't think there's anything for us to learn there. I mean, I think there are ways to characterize it. I think there are lessons to be leaned from it still, but we understand our revenue side. I don't think that's our issue.
Not the low hanging fruit.
So we've got this data, both the building permit, tax.
We're not going to be
data.
Surprised by anything. You know, it's not going to. Oh my God, did you know that? It's just.
What about traffic and roads?
Yep, I am. I've been jotting a list. We can get traffic incident data. We can get crime statistics. Okay. We also have. We could probably compile if it's not digital already. Data on like zoning and minimum housing violations.
Oh yeah.
To see about quality of housing.
Okay.
I don't think we have any employment data, like how many people work in South Kingstown.
No,
there's something about unemployment.
Shows
up in the town.
Well, there's
report.
An unemployment.
There's a table. There's a table that breaks up employment in town by 12 different categories. Good.
The census has a table, but it's...
DLT, probably.
This was in town. Commuters. It was pretty comprehensive. It was
where
an eye-opener. It was issued... Go back and look.
Okay.
Wasn't it in the comp plan, or was it in...
For all of our reports is ACA. All of it. All of our employment and demographics.
It was an eye-opener. Okay. I might even have it here, but
It said how many people worked in manufacturing and food.
Yeah, so the census has
that might be census.
But it's not, I understand it, and maybe I'm wrong. It's what industry our employees work in, but it's people who live in the town, not work.
Yeah.
It's I live here and I'm in this industry.
I see.
Not I work here and I'm in this industry.
Oh, okay.
That
could be
a different thing. It's because I've seen all of that data. It's broken down by type of employment, industry, occupation, lots of tables. But I believe it's like the population's industry, not the workers' industry.
Gosh, if I can remember, I just was in a presentation. Department of Labor and Training had a Bureau of Statistical Analysis a month ago, maybe. I can reach out to the, okay. the guy that I was in that training with, because maybe he would know a way for us to get the data.
Yeah, it would be helpful. There used to be a an economic census, but I haven't seen that in a while.
So the challenge is we should be looking for the simplest possible model.
Yep.
We've got a lot of stuff here. Yeah.
Actually, this is not that complicated.
No, no. It's not that bad.
It's not bad.
I bet there's a correlation coefficient between a lot of these factors that we can mesh them into one thing.
Well, I think you have to go back to these.
You have to go back to your 3 points about if something here we can't directly attribute it to one of those drivers, then we might not want to.
Although I think affordability, commutability, and then the quality of life factors do matter a lot. I think that people choose here versus Narragansett because they like the parks versus the bars. I mean, you know, there's something.
Yeah,
that's
why
that's
we moved here.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about that we have to.
If you can afford a home in South Kingstown and Charlestown, you pick one or the other based on quality of life.
Right. So everything we've got so far on here fits into that paradigm: quality of life, transportation.
I think affordability, commutability, and those two are economic. I think safety, cleanliness,
for families, the schools,
places to go,
school. Yeah.
I'm sorry?
Except for families, the schools.
Schools, absolutely. But that's a quality of life, not an economic question.
Yeah.
In public school.
And then, did I just read in the paper, I read it awfully quickly, that South Kingstown didn't do terribly well on the...
No one did.
Rhode Island didn't.
Rhode Island. It was Rhode Island altogether that didn't.
Yeah. I mean, compared to Massachusetts,
there's always that concomitant comparison.
Yeah.
So Rhode Island's lower than Massachusetts.
These were...
But I thought even South Kingstown was below...
In some respects, yeah.
Yeah, I thought it was...
You're right, it wasn't a glowing report.
No, it was not. It seems to... I should have paid more attention to it because I thought it was...
There's some questions to the validity of some of that for this year. I have a fourth grader, and... they did not teach them how to use a computer, and this was the first time they had a computerized test. So they didn't know how to scroll, for instance, some of the younger kids, and the some of the testing was very complicated. Like it was like you had to pick something from the toolbar, and you know, and so there was some problem with. Because it was the first year of that test, and this was the first year that they mandated that it be done on a computer, and we didn't have the option to do a written version, that brought our scores down. I mean, I don't think you can blame. I don't think you can say that for the 7th and 8th graders, right? But the third and 4th graders, yeah.
I think what you're talking about is beyond the RICAST test.
Oh, okay.
Because they just came out with the report card. Significantly more comprehensive.
Oh, okay.
But that was a piece of it. But it's and we did have two of our schools with 2 stars.
Yeah.
One of our schools with 4 stars and the other with 3.
Yeah, Peacedale did well.
Peacedale,
but
and that's
Wakefield
been a blue ribbon school.
Wakefield Elementary
and Matunic the same.
Yeah,
is demographics a part of that at all?
I looked at it significantly, but I don't remember drilling into. Yeah. There was something about certain populations and how they performed. So it was definitely, and almost regardless for our purposes of what was driving that outcome. Is we have a report that says we have 2 of our 7 schools are 2 stars. So if you're coming to look into a neighborhood, you're going to say you have 7 schools, 2 stars, 3 stars, 4 stars. That's not a great distribution, especially within a state that if you look at, if you have the ability to, say you work in Warwick, you can live in Massachusetts, you can be within that radius and find that mm-hmm. district with better schools, and if we're just a mediocre district amongst that whole radius, then we've got a challenge.
Right.
Well, that's what I worried when I read that report.
So again, the basic model here, though, is communities attract people based on economic factors, affordability, commutability, and quality of life factors. the quality of the schools, the, you know, things to do, the bar scene, the park scene, the whatever it is. And if these aren't the right things that folks focus on, let's blow the, you know, let's rename them. Let's get the right ones in there. But I don't know what else it is. I don't know how. I mean, every decision about where I lived was based on one of these, and in fact, probably all of these factors. I don't want to live in a neighborhood that's dangerous, so I never lived in a ghetto. Cheaper housing, but I chose not to do it because it had something going that I didn't want to be any part of. So I think these are the things that matter, but again, if there's others, we should capture them and start looking for data that informs our understanding of those.
I think it probably fits in your model somewhere, but there's also a piece, and Susan mentioned it earlier, about having the right type of housing for me to move into.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not there, actually. It's mm-hmm. partially affordability, right? Can I afford right. the type of housing that I need in this community? But
housing
it's also
type.
Just mm-hmm. type. Do mm-hmm. I have the right kind of housing for my needs
right.
in that community?
Yeah, I feel like that we miss out somehow, but I'm not very knowledgeable. It's just an impressionistic.
I guess yeah. I'm still struggling a little bit with an important factor, I think very important factor, is how many jobs there are here.
Yeah, yeah.
So you could say, well, wait, if we have jobs here, it's within the 30-minute commute, so it's indirectly reflected.
Right.
But it's a magnet that brings people in. As
yeah.
opposed to the job is somewhere else, and am I going to choose to live in South Kingstown?
Yeah, the way I've seen the relationship is it's commutability and it's business opportunity. If I can work locally, I will. If
yeah.
I can start a business locally, I will. If somebody else has started a business, that's
we
good.
We could actually, there's just, we get Schneider Electric that would be the way to even test all that. Because
they're gone, right?
They're going.
For all practical purposes. I don't know how many employees were
there. Jay Newsom left me a 2-minute voicemail while I was out last week, and he came in to see me today, and he wants to add, talking about ABC and Schneider Electric to the next ABC agenda. Mm-hmm. He thinks we should do a survey of their employees that are left to find out some of these questions. Were you living in South Kingstown? Why or why not? That sort of thing. And then he actually wants you and I to go and meet with the executives there and say, well, why did you come? Why are you leaving? What could we have done differently? That sort of thing. But that could still...
But there's also more information there. If we just looked at annual employment...
Yes.
From... I know they'll know it because, mm-hmm. you know, they'll have payroll
that's
records
what we're
that go back,
yeah,
but you
back,
go back to 2000
the,
at least
what the effect
and
was.
Figure
yeah.
out how many people were working for Schneider Electric. And now that number is significantly less, whatever it is. It matters forward-looking, but
right.
you can tell, all right, so that drop in private employment in this particular case did something. It meant
yeah.
something to the town. I don't know what that
yeah, well,
did.
Right, because yeah. those were good mm-hmm. jobs, and there were a number of them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But for a long time, there have been telework jobs, too, so I don't know how many of those folks were.
Yeah.
You know, so that's another whole policy area that gets informed by this, because commutability... If you can say to folks, look, you can live in Boston, New York, and if you only got to go up once a week, this is a great spot to be.
That changes
yeah.
that a lot, right?
And that is increasingly a model, I think.
Yep.
That people are going to want to be just working in their pajamas from.
But
their
that means room. We've got to have good internet access. We've got.
I.
It means they can't have 3-year-olds at home.
Unless you're good with the mute
that's a good
button.
Point.
So it's back to young kids again.
Right, right.
The more young kids we have, the more people not working.
Well, that's
at home.
The thing is that we see the birth rate going down, right? But we don't know how much of that is due to something like Schneider Electric leaving town or economic
right.
conditions, and how much of it is people are having less
right.
kids.
Yeah. I think you'll see if you do a sort of look at demographic data nationally,
yeah.
the younger
yeah.
generation
yeah.
is not
yeah.
having kids.
Yeah,
they're
I was going to say, I was going to say you can
less.
Test some of that against national statistics.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. In the Northeast, it's definitely
yeah.
that,
yeah.
that's
yeah.
the
yeah.
absolute
yeah.
trend.
Household sizes are smaller. Yeah. Just, that's the way it is.
Well, broadband and internet service is an important thing, and we are
mm-hmm.
a dead zone for some reason I can't figure out.
Okay. And that would, I think,
you can't keep
that,
a call on Main Street.
Although it seems
no,
silly,
you can't
that
keep
is a quality
call
of life
Main Street.
Issue.
I tried to solve
and
that.
An economic issue.
And an
both
economic
of those.
Issue. Yeah.
I tried to get Verizon and AT&T to do something about that. I worked on that for 2 years, and
it is something else, isn't it?
You can't keep a call on Main Street.
I got a call today from a guy who was grousing about the fact that his cable company, I don't know where in town he was now, was just not going to come down the line. They stopped halfway down his street. Is there any way I can force them to come to the end of the street? I said, I can't. call the Public Utilities Commission.
That's not an outrageous thing. I mean, people now want broadband access. They want wireless access. They want everything that they...
Mobile. Yeah. Well, I think that's an important quality of life thing. And when I've talked to URI graduates who seem to be, in my very casual experience, a very dedicated to this community bunch of people. They really seem to want to live here. Mm-hmm. I think we got to do something about making sure we find out why they can't stay here. I mean, they can't find places to work, not only jobs like at Schneider Electric, but if they want to do their own work. Right. There are no, I've said this many, there are no WeWork kind of places in town.
WeWork, incubators, all of those are possible, but we don't have anything
We don't have housing types that those graduates want to move into.
We don't have housing. Right. That's why I think
staying at home if they grew up here.
Right.
No, that's why I think this housing we're going to build, the new housing we're going to build, has to suit them better.
Right. So, we got a list of data sets.
Continuing on that, what did your notes reflect from our ongoing conversation beyond what?
I think that's the building permit, tax assessor, traffic incident, crime statistics,
zoning
and housing violations.
Yep. Employment data.
I have employment data with a question mark.
Tom, for follow up on that?
Yeah, we'll see what we can get if there's any employment data.
Okay, just state that again. What?
The employment data you referenced that you'd seen.
Oh, sure, I'll look at that, yeah. Yep. I think we have it, I think I have it electronically. Okay. I definitely have a hard copy.
Okay.
Is there any
where I'm going next is to you two for whether we want to get your data onto the FTP site.
There's no reason not to.
I'll send out the info for everybody. And then I also have to add potentially to the model housing type as a factor and then broadband quality and availability.
So how would we categorize type?
There's a bunch of different ways. You can categorize it by single family versus multifamily.
Based on data that we already have.
That would be the easiest way based on data we already have. The tax assessor's model or their data would say whether it's a single family standalone, detached, or a multifamily. It wouldn't necessarily give you how many bedrooms or that sort of thing, but you can at least sort of get a sense of is it a single family with a yard and a front yard and a fence.
We just recently decided to figure out how many were on big lots and how many were on small lots.
Yeah.
We just did that.
What do you mean to figure out?
What percentage of our housing stock is on 1 acre or more? It's about half.
I think there's a lot of analysis we can do with the appraiser's data to get really into the meat of the housing, what we have and what we don't. And the Horsley Wayne Group is doing some of that for us now also.
Is there any way to, in any of this data that we have, that we can, as much data that we can get backwards can help inform a model that, I know you had talked about getting some of that URI information, but we could only go back like 2 years with what we had readily available.
We were looking at employees, right? I just recently got from Joanna Esposito the student count in 10-year increments, going back to the 60s, but I didn't ask for the employer.
Didn't Chris Roman get us something for
URI? He had something, too.
We should be able to get that from URI. Mm-hmm.
But even things like the assessor's information, I don't...
Yeah, the assessor's data, I don't know how they keep it, but...
That's kind of the...
I don't know if it shows change over time, if it's...
Of the building?
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
Or the stock, right? I don't know. So, there's a year built, and you can get all the data about the year built.
You overwrite the old data.
Yeah.
I mean, there's probably cards and some...
punched.
The easiest thing to do with the assessor's data is to take the year built number, right, 1979, and then you can get all the characteristics for everything built in 1979, and then you can get everything built in 1980 and sort of show a progression over time. But it doesn't count for if something was replaced, right? It doesn't
Mm-hmm. The average age of our housing stock is incredible, too. It's like 1919. Yeah. I'm not kidding. It's like that average. Old. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's really old.
I'm doing my part. I live in an 1820 house.
Nice. Thank you. Yeah, there's also another... There's a different demographic database that I've used. The voter database has residents here with their year that they've come in to town, or at least become... declared eligibility to vote.
Right.
That's there.
That's a good longevity
stat. That's a good one.
And I have some of those lists going back to 2006, which will... They're just big files right now, but there's ways to get information about the actual people here. Not much, just... their age and when they started voting here, but...
I mean, the American Community Survey has a ton of demographic data about our population, a ton of it. So, and it goes back for decades and decades. So if there's specific demographic data points we want to look at, we can just pull it from there. Age of the population, their income, all of that, all of it. Whether they own their house or rent it, whether, you know, when they move to the community, all of that stuff's there.
So let's just say we fast forward, we've got that data, we've crunched it, it's in graphs. That's, what about forward looking? I mean, what we're really looking to do here is make projections on the future, right? And it helps knowing where we were, what the rates of change were, and explanations for what made things go up or down.
But we've got to understand preferences.
I think, yeah.
We've got to understand preferences. We've got to know how much of it was commute, how much of it was affordability, how much of it was schools, and how much of it was safety, and how much of it...
But to infer that from this data...
We're not going to be able to infer that from this data. So, no way.
So how do we get our arms around that?
If we tie in... That's why it's important to look back. You make some assumptions, you test those assumptions with known data, and then you say, okay, this... when we've affected these drivers,
After South County Commons and retail options became possible,
And it doesn't. It's not. It doesn't have to be perfect, but it has to be something. That we can test.
Yeah.
I bet it's going to be tricky though, because I bet there's not going to be. You know, we haven't had a crime wave, and we haven't had had some...
There hasn't been a major development
set of things that could...
And then you have to overlay the whole national economy over that.
Yeah, so that was one of the issues. When we look at the birth data, or the data that we would like to look at, it's the last 10 years, right? And the last 10 years was like a complete anomaly nationally. Mm-hmm. So how much of that, you know, we're looking at, looking at what happened in 08, 09, 10. Yeah. I'm like, I can just throw that out the window because that's not going to happen again, hopefully.
What goes up must come down.
Right.
So once we get
But even so, like, I don't know, can I use that data at all to predict the next 3 years? Probably not.
No.
Right? And so I don't really have what I need from the past at this point to look at the future because of how close we are to that, you know, to that 4 or 5 year period that just has to get tossed up.
You've got some pretty good statistical background, right, to start checking correlations and at least
I think our first step is getting our hands
I think we have to look at it, figuring out
what we want to do and use, and then maybe a two-pronged approach of looking who else has already done this. Mm. Who else has already done this sort of modeling and forecasting, and what can we take away from them? And then possibly also the origination. I'm a little dubious on the originating it ourselves, but I think it could still be worth a try.
Yeah. So, like, one of the things I thought was interesting when I look back at the birth data is I would expect that you would have a drop in births during the recession. But what actually happened is the drop in births started in, like, 2014, which was strange to me. Like,
after the recovery.
It was after the recovery. Yeah. It's like people, you would think that there would be a rebound in births, and 2014 to 2017 was the worst period of births for this town.
I think it takes time to make family decisions.
So it was interesting.
I don't think people make decisions about when they have children based on whether they can afford it.
Yeah, I also don't think that happens.
No.
Good point.
Well, they also have spare time.
Then we have no children.
Periods of recession.
Yeah. Right,
so you can stay home with the kids. And I don't know.
I don't know. Like, it was just... It didn't fit with my hypothesis.
Okay, so we have our plan of action for gathering data on the FTP site.
But the only person who's walking out of here with an assignment is maybe Roland and Chelsea, and that doesn't seem quite right.
And Tom.
Oh, and Tom.
Yeah, that's an easy one for me. But yeah.
I think it would be helpful to get back to this preferences idea, to do some sort of research on what drives preference, right? I know from when I was in planning school, there are studies out there about, you know, quality of life attributes and how much they affect someone's decision to live in a place. Those things exist. We need someone to sort of start looking for them.
You know what I find when I start looking at these things, though, is that there is work like that, but I don't know how much of it fits on a little suburban, rural, rust belt or whatever we are, you know, New England community, because they tend to look at...
So maybe the way for us to do it is to just look at the literature we can get our hands on about affordability and choice, place of residence choices, and commutability, the journey to work stuff, and just try to get a handle on what the world says about that.
Can we put together a survey or something? And
I think we end up with a survey at some point. My concern about a survey is... It's not going to be perfect, but we're also going to most likely not be able to follow through year after year after year. So we're just going to end up...
So you get a snapshot,
You're going to survey people who already live here, too, right? You're not going to get I didn't move here because this, or...
That's true. Good point.
Although we could. I mean, we could do a survey of recent immigrants into Narragansett, Charlestown, Richmond, North Kingston. Yeah, we could. I mean, we could.
Yeah. Yeah. And say, why didn't you move to South County?
Welcome to South County. I mean, we could find somebody to help us. Welcome to South County. We want to know about why you made that. Maybe the chamber would run, you know, that survey project.
Maybe. Maybe the chamber can do it. If it came from the chamber instead of from us, we might get a higher response.
Yeah.
And the chamber is now the chamber of Southern Rhode Island. They're not.
Yeah.
They're not.
Oh, South don't tell us. We know you didn't live through that. We did.
I know. Susan, it sounds like you and me are going to research preferences.
Okay. So yeah, I mean, I read that stuff. I mean, I
do too.
Always read it with great interest, and then think, oh, it doesn't really apply to where I live.
I think the demographic too, because what millennials would prefer and weight as high priority is going to be different than other bands.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of stuff on that too. Yeah. You know, it's contradictory sometimes. They don't want to drive. Actually, they are starting to drive. Well, they don't want to
as they
have
get
families.
Older, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So it's there'll be a lot of noise.
Yes.
In whatever it is we find.
I think it would be helpful for someone to look at the American Fact Finder site on the census and figure out which of those data points are relevant, because there's a lot of them. And I'm not going to pull every table out of the census and put it on the FTP site. So someone could just say, oh, well, these things would be really critical. I can figure that out.
Jason, would you like a task?
The NESDAQ are on in PDF, but I have all those numbers in a spreadsheet that I can upload to the to the FTP site.
Yeah, but what about looking at this stuff with Chelsea?
Yeah, the census stuff. I mean, I can get whatever tables you want me to. I just would rather not get 100 census tables.
Why don't you wait, before you download any of it, just wait just a little bit. Just give us one more go with this before we start.
I mean, descriptive data to me right now just isn't going to be
It's not going to be that useful, I don't think. So I would wait until we had some better sense of what we were trying to answer.
Descriptive data paused until a meeting agenda or two down the road.
how often?
Yeah, when are we?
That's our next item on the agenda, right after discussing membership of this. Because originally this was a subcommittee of the EDC, so it was just Tom, Susan. Still is. Tom, Susan, and myself. I'd really like you two guys to be on here. And Nicole, who I haven't met, you recommended her highly.
Yes,
I think.
Yeah.
So that we can get a committee of six plus Rob at whenever you'd like to be here.
This is exciting to me. I mean, this is the most useful tool, at least potential tool, we've got in town right now. I mean, decision-making in South Kingstown to date has not been data-driven except for budget number data. Nothing else is really driven decision-making.
I'm just thinking administratively how that works to add members to your committee.
I don't know how that works either.
I don't either, but I think it's probably a recommendation from the three of you to the full EDC to add them to the committee at the next meeting,
yeah.
Which would be before your next meeting. Your next EDC meeting is in, what, 3 to 2 weeks?
Yeah,
three,
it makes sense to get some sort of official sanction from the
committee.
I agree.
So we'll just have the existing committee say we recommend adding these three members, and then the EDC will take a vote on it.
Community committee members.
Perfect.
Okay. Now, there were some other people on the EDC who were kind of miffed that they didn't get asked to be on this, but that's...
They had the option to volunteer, but I said, if you're not data fluent, please don't, because it will slow us down.
But also, we had the open meeting problem of needing to be a small... We couldn't be a quorum of the EDC, but they don't count as EDC members, so I think that should be all right.
That's right.
Right? Okay.
Right.
Sorry, that took me longer to figure out.
We got there. Okay, so now let's talk about future meetings.
Okay.
Future meetings. My initial thinking was, so we don't lose momentum on this, was an every other week interval. If that's too often, I'm receptive to that feedback.
I think we should do it frequently in the beginning,
yep.
And then if it turns out we can slow it down for more time. Yeah. But I think, for me, this was just kind of an initial meeting. I didn't know them. I hadn't heard what Rob was going to say about this. I didn't know what Chelsea's sources were going to be. So I'd be willing to come back in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So the only complicating factor with is that will put you starting in February. Hold on, let me just make sure I'm calculating my month correctly. Where are we? Today,
29th of January.
29th of January is your next one. Starting in February, that'll put you on the same night as the planning board, which I can't commit to. Because the planning board meets the second.
All right. Well, let's do the next. So let's do the next one, and then.
So we'll meet on the 29th, and then plan it from there.
And then do a 3 week interval or something.
Or just move it to Wednesday, or Wednesday, Thursday.
I do have some conflicts. Not every
day as well.
Thursdays are generally open days in terms of other town committees. Tuesdays, if it's the first and third, is okay because that's not the planning board.
So you could skip a
week. Yeah, that'd be fine.
Different.
Yeah, it works. Yeah.
Let's plan for that. Then I didn't solicit you to every other week, 29th. Does that work for both of you moving forward?
Well, the 29th is, I believe, the work session on the school facilities with the town council
at
school.
Seven. Yep.
Why is that not on the town council?
Because it hasn't been posted yet.
Oh. And that's something you're involved with.
Yeah, and we would be.
And you would be involved too.
So why don't we say
involved? Well, how about
skip the 29th and do the? Well, is the 5th going to be the planning board work session?
Yes.
Yeah. So what if we were to do Mondays work as well as Tuesdays? No, Jason.
I'm fine.
Mondays
yeah, work for me.
Any days.
How about Thursdays? Do Thursdays work?
They don't for me.
Thursdays are complicated. I mean, not every Thursday, but it's the night when I have a lot of other board meetings.
We could do Tuesday if we move it to 5.
I was going to say, why don't we move it to 5? Who can't come?
Probably do 5.
We could keep it on every other today, like from now on, if we move it to 5.
And this is one day. Like if we were on every other schedule, and I may or may not be able to get to some of them, but
well, that's going to be true for all of us.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
So why don't we say the next one will be the 29th at 5?
Okay.
Which would be right before that school committee meeting.
That's all right.
And then we'll discuss the next meeting at that time. Okay. Work for everybody.
Yeah.
Fine.
Okay, then are there any other people?
What is this called?
We're calling it the Economic Data Subcommittee.
Yeah, okay.
Just for lack of a better name.
Are there any other?
I like Economic Forecasting Subcommittee better.
Oh, hey, there you go. I thought we do need a better name.
Data's too boring.
Yeah.
Forecasting is more potent.
But a highly risky
Yep.
Endeavor.
Yes, it is.
Also, might open yourselves up to more prodding if you're forecasting instead of just delivering the data.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
If you're making predictions.
Yes, that's true.
And then there were the people who say, is it going to rain?
So then you only have to be right half the time. 50% chance. Okay. So we're meeting on the 29th, 5 p.m., right back here, second floor conference room.
Yeah.
Any other comments for the good of us all? This is a good first meeting. We're going to be getting our data. We all have our projects, and we'll move from there.
Sounds good.
Great. Thank you.
Right. I assume whatever data that I can get, you would prefer in like an Excel spreadsheet. As
opposed to?
Like a PDF.
Something manipulative.
Yeah. Can you send out? Can you send us the FTP?
I will. Yeah. Let me make a note. I'd like to do this for tomorrow.
Okay. Right. Thank you all.
Good.
Happy to have you all.
Yeah, then, thank you for having me.
And Jason and Roland especially.
Thank you.
Hurrah! Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And now I committed to somewhat regular briefings for the school.
All right, are we done? Well, someone had just hit that red button on the front of the
this mic. One?
Nope, it's on the front. The red circle.